Serial Entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Serial Entrepreneur, brought to you by Startups Magazine. My name is Anna Flockett and I will be your host. And in today's episode, I will be chatting to Alan Holland, founder and CEO of Kilva, a strategic sourcing automation software company that is actually using AI to help suppliers in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis keep up with demand. As Kilva assists with procurement through sourcing bots, who can identify where to find additional resources in just minutes. So very useful currently. Alan, it's very exciting to have you on the show. First of all, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm very good. Pleasure to speak with you, Anna.
Thank you very much. So I thought today, to start with, maybe we could just talk a little bit more about Kilva in general and what you guys do day to day.
Yes, Kilva, we're an Irish headquartered software company and we're focused on software as a service for procurement and supply chain. So we work with large companies. We see various industries from food to pharmaceuticals to automotive, and they're all battling different challenges at present.
Of course. And where did the idea for Kilva come from?
So previous to my current role, I was a lecturer in artificial intelligence in University College Cork, and I specialized in optimization and game theory. So I was looking at trading agents and software systems for improving economic efficiency in internet environment. So we were building bots for automation of negotiations and the optimization of supply chains in industrial settings.
Oh, cool. And when was it that you then founded Kilva, that you then went and took the step and decided to...
So yeah, when I was working in the university, I was often approached by various organisations to help them with some challenges they may have had in their supply chains. And I had various consulting projects, and over a period of time, it became obvious there was a market need for more advanced tools to help big companies manage sourcing challenges. So sourcing, or strategic sourcing, is when you're going to market for and you're buying a large number of items or services across numerous regions or countries. So if you've got a large spend volume, then it's good to have advanced sourcing tools to help you negotiate good deals and win-win deals with suppliers.
Of course. And how many people are now on your team? How have you got from when it founded to kind of where you are now?
We have a team of about 35 people in total now, and we're, I suppose, adding new people all the time. So we have several open positions, and I think by the end of this year we'll be at 50 plus team members, maybe 60 even.
Wow, that's really, really exciting. And so could you tell me more about the technology and the AI that you use within the company? How does it work?
In short, when a big company is going to market, and if you're buying goods or services, you're going to have tens or hundreds of suppliers offering different things, and they want to package things up differently, and they want to share their constraints. They want to offer you conditional discounts, and the winner determination problem in that setting is quite challenging, because you've got to look at what combinations of suppliers, of small, medium and large, you can piece together. So the algorithms for just finding efficient allocation are challenging. So that's why very few software companies can support highly complex sourcing projects. And our software, our first product was a sourcing optimizer to help big companies manage big sourcing projects. But inevitably, that type of kind of advanced sourcing tool, it's like the F-16 fighter jet of e-sourcing. It's highly complex, and it's more difficult to fly because it needs experts to manage sourcing optimization. So our second product was sourcing bots. These would be software bots in place of human users to run your negotiations. So what we're arguing is that instead of having a human sitting into your F-16 fighter jet, you now have a robot fly it faster. And it's a step change. It's quite a radical change for organizations. Just considering having a software bot replace a human in buying activities. So that's what's changing.
Of course. And have you had many people, you know, there's the whole argument within the industry that the robots are taking over humans' jobs and they're like putting us out of work. Have you had this conversation and this argument with quite a few customers or people in the industry?
Absolutely, that comes up all the time. I would say that that's becoming a more frequent aspect of our day-to-day conversations with companies. Some people would have a fear that it's going to take away loads of jobs, and others would see it as an opportunity to have people who are presently overworked focus on activities that machines can't do. There are many things machines will never be good at, and humans will always be better at. And what we tend to say to our customers is that the work that's to be automated is the type of work that your employees tend not to like doing anyway, because much of it is operational. It's data manipulation, and it can be time consuming, and you're cleansing data, or you may be going through predictable processes, generating the same type of reports, or, you know, things that can be automated, probably should be automated. But then other activities like relationship management with suppliers, you can never automate that. And there's rarely enough time invested in spending time to speak to suppliers about what they're innovating in terms of product or service development. And if you can understand that better, then you may be well placed to take advantage of some of the added value suppliers can offer. Although the nature of procurement is going to change radically, it's for the better. And we don't forecast that there's mass layoffs in procurement. Instead, the nature of the jobs in procurement and supply chain will change for the better.
Of course. So it's more like a change of job rather than a loss of job.
Completely. And this kind of the skills of that require human empathy are going to become very valuable skills. We're not arguing for a second that relationships are going away. In fact, I would say relationships will become stronger, because much of the operational or the ad hoc tactical buying will be automated. But strategic negotiations, because people working in procurement, a lot of their time will be saved. They will have more time available to actually sit down and talk to suppliers about problems they've had in selling into these big organizations and what new offerings they're planning in their R&D and how that could help them as an organization. Because that kind of stuff, it gets left until the very end, because most big companies, they have to do the operational stuff. They're always firefighting. Most of their teams are firefighting all the time, just getting goods and services through an organization to the people that need them within their organization. Much of what they're doing there can be automated.
Yeah, that's the good thing about the industry that you guys are in. And it's really interesting to see, because working with a lot of startups, I have a particular interest in like the engineering and manufacturing and automation, but you don't tend to see very many startup companies coming through in these industries. How have you found it being a startup within this sort of industry, and do you see many other companies starting up and coming through as well?
Yeah, I think the key for startups, your initial market that you serve within these big companies may not be a huge target market, but that's okay, because you want to get your foot in the door. So you find a niche where you're the best in the world at that niche, and they feel they really need you for that. Most big companies have a reluctance to increase the number of suppliers they're dealing with. There's kind of a natural reluctance on their part to do so. So in our case, we focused in on sourcing optimization, which is, I would say, the most challenging type of software to develop for procurement, because it deals with managing extremely large projects. Could be tens or hundreds of thousands of line items. You could have hundreds of suppliers all bidding on different combinations. So you've got to have a background in advanced optimization to be able to create mathematical models and allow scenario analysis and optimization and based on different objective functions and so on. So you kind of have to come from an academic background just to get into that niche. But the addressable market there may not be huge, because it's only the biggest companies would use that software for kind of between 10 and 30 sourcing projects a year. So that once you develop a reputation then and you become the best in the world at that at that specialization, you gain trust, and your customers are then open to listening as to what else could we do for them. And when we proposed, you know, many of our customers would have said, well, we can't deploy optimization very widely because we couldn't possibly train up hundreds of users to use this very advanced type of software. And we agreed and we said, we're going to approach it differently. We're going to build sourcing bots that will fly this on your behalf. And we'll talk to you and talk to your experts about how we should automate different categories that have never benefited from optimization before. So this is a kind of completely new type of software solution. And all our existing customers, you know, from Coca-Cola's to Siemens and BMW's and so on, they all said, yeah, sign us up. You guys have done great work for us with your first product. We are very open to listening to what you can do with your second product. And it sounds like it could be even bigger opportunity. So it's about baby steps. You know, you don't try to land into big enterprises and solve all their problems at once. You pick off a subset and make sure you're the best of the best at that. And have patience. You know, don't rush it. You have to build trust over a few years and then grow from there.
So of course, and leading on for that, you touched on it slightly, but what have been the main sort of challenges that you've faced along the way?
The main challenges, I would say that biggest challenge initially was just getting known, getting our first big customers. That kind of had to, when you're starting out on day one, you don't have much to show, right? So there's no point in hiring or investing heavily in sales. You kind of got to do the sales yourself first, because inevitably you're going to market and you're selling yourself more so than your software product, because the product's just not there yet. So you've got to be willing to sell professional services coupled with the software product. There might be no user interface in the software product. It might be a back end, kind of just an engine that you can use when coupled with consulting work that you can deliver value. So in our case, that was our approach to things, that we sold professional services coupled with a software solution and had that morph into a self-service solution over time. For every company, that kind of iterative cycle is different, and you got to find the path and the steps that work for you. But in our case, that's what worked.
Yeah, definitely. And do it in the right order, of course. Well, I guess with a current situation like the COVID-19 crisis, there's no sort of planning or right order to do things in. And I believe that you explained to me that businesses that are able to survive in the current climate are those that have agile responses, and sourcing automation is one of these things that allows businesses to quickly respond and source alternative supply faster than competitors, for example. So how has Kilva and sourcing automation in general helped within the crisis?
Yeah, so this crisis is causing a bit of chaos in various markets. You know, just yesterday we saw that how oil prices had turned negative. The similar chaos in logistics markets, the markets for air freight, ocean freight and road freight, they are extremely volatile. And what we're seeing is we deal with big blue chip companies who normally what they do on an annual basis is they lock in rates. So they might have 5,000 origin destination pairs for, let's say, their ocean freight or their air freight. And when they need to move goods, they just draw down from a rate card. But now what they're finding is that those rate cards they negotiated in these annual or multi-annual deals, they're not being honoured. Everything is turning to the spot market. But that's very difficult for a large enterprise to just try and manage the high volume of spot buying they need to do now. Do we try and move air freight cargo from Brussels to New York, or do we send it by road to Paris and go by Paris to Boston and by road from Boston to New York? So you have all of these routing considerations and as well as pricing considerations, and supply chains are somewhat chaotic. And the nature of the difficulty for you depends on whether you're a food company or an automotive company or a pharmaceutical or a medical device company, that you need to prioritize different things. And if you're selling COVID-19 test kits, then your speed is of the essence. Or if it's PPE, you know, speed is also of the essence. But if it's grain, then, you know, it's more price oriented. So having sourcing bots that can go to market and hoover up more information and make the assessments based on algorithms that you give to the sourcing bot. You know, you specify the algorithm for just deciding what's a good solution and how you want to balance price versus speed, for example. And the bot will negotiate on your behalf by putting out requests to market, asking for the best offers, doing the scenario analysis, reporting back, this is the best scenario, and asking for approval. If you have a sourcing bot in place, you can delay factor that's occurring in procurement just to buy the transportation service to get your goods from A to B. You're kind of removing that because the bots can do it 10 times faster and they can find better deals as well. So the agility that sourcing automation is bringing to some of our customers who are in the pharmaceutical space and the food space, that's proving extremely valuable to those and retail is another one.
Of course, yes. And I guess people don't really think about it. Like when you think now of the COVID crisis, you kind of just think the NHS and the doctors and the nurses, but this is just as important to get things to them and to get food to people. And like you said, like test kits and stuff. How important is this sort of technology and this system working for us right now?
Yeah, no, it's actually sitting behind the supply chains of many of these companies who are serving the likes of the NHS or Tesco's or your hardware store. That many of the companies who are manufacturing the goods or even transporting the goods or warehousing the goods are relying on sourcing automation to dynamically reorchestrate their supply chains according to day-to-day market conditions. So, you know, decisions that used to be taken on a, let's say, an annual cadence or even slower are now happening on a weekly or daily basis. Things are changing so fast. So kind of lives depend on it, and I would say it's that important now.
Yeah, definitely, especially when the whole COVID-19 thing first broke and everyone just went to the supermarket and bought every single bag of pasta there ever was.
Yeah, that's it. And that causes these kind of ripple effects then up the line. And these supply chains haven't been used to that type of disruption. And it's still the case. You see feeding through now to oil. And that's the latest example of a commodity that's going to have knock-on effects into renewable energies as well. So there's all of these primary effects and then secondary effects. You know, we'd have customers in the oil and gas sector, but also customers in the renewable energy sector. And they're all being affected in different ways.
Definitely. And I guess you've touched on this slightly, but are there any other advantages that you can think of that sourcing automation presents to businesses that we haven't obviously already covered, maybe in more of like a general life, as well as obviously the COVID-19 crisis situation?
Another good example is that some of the large FMCG companies are reliant on outsourced service providers to run tactical buying. And they're very often offices with several hundred personnel working in close proximity in either Eastern Europe or Asia, typically. A lot of those shared service centres have been shut down because, like just as in call centres, you can't be working in close proximity. But in some of those countries, there isn't necessarily broadband as well. It's procurement operations itself have been has been very badly hit by this pandemic. And there's a sudden kind of realisation that there was a weakness in the whole system is having large numbers of people working in close proximity in these type of shared service operations. And the nature of BPO is going to change, and business process outsourcing. We would argue at Keelvar that sourcing automation is going to radically change how BPO is done. And there's going to be more coupling of human plus machine type of operations, where there's going to be a smaller number of people working in those type of environments, but they'll be working with bots, and the bots doing much of the heavy lifting there. And then back at HQ, in many of these enterprises, there will be more people recruited to doing supplier relationship management or training AI systems to continuously improve. So the nature of that work in procurement is changing radically.
Of course. And have you guys personally at Kielva had to change and adapt in the sense of like remote working and self-isolation? Has it affected your business in any way?
I think we're probably on, in terms of the spectrum of those heavily affected to those least affected, we're closest to the least affected. As a software as a service company, we're lucky that we can do all our work remotely. All the tools we use are all in the cloud. The product that we're building is hosted in the cloud. So we can continue working from home. And I would say nearly one quarter to one third of our staff were all working from home before this crisis ever started. So now it's 100% working from home. And I would say it functions fine. It wouldn't be my preference in the long run. I think that there's a lot of benefits and you know, softer information that's shared when you're in closer contact. And some of that will be missed. But I suppose we're doing our best to ensure that we have good daily sync-ups and good internal communications. But we're very lucky in that respect, and others are face bigger challenges.
Definitely. And is it fair to say that the last 2 months have been a lot busier for you guys, and with the whole sourcing bots and sourcing automation process trying to help the companies? How would you describe the last 2 months, or since it all kind of blew up, how would you describe the experience for Kielva?
I would say it's the first time we've had very large enterprises turning around to us and saying, can we get a bot up and running within the next week for this category? And usually these big enterprises that we serve, that tend to be in the Fortune 500, they never aim to do anything within a week. You know, that's almost like completely unrealistic timescale in their view. Now it's achievable, but because nature of SaaS these days, things can move much faster. But up until this crisis, we've always been the ones telling our enterprise customers, look, you can actually do things much faster than you're used to in bygone days. And it's always been us pushing them. And now it's turned around and they're saying, look, guys, can we have this up and running next week? So they're actually starting to push back on us and say, okay, can we do it even faster? And so I think that's, you know, that's good for us, because it's pushing us a bit to get these solutions out there faster. But yeah, and that is like sectors like food and pharmaceuticals that have that real urgency to, I would say, rapidly evolve now.
Of course. And obviously it's kind of pushed you or excelled you guys in a way. What do you have planned for the future? I guess short term for the rest of the crisis, because it's unknown when it will technically finish. And like you say, it'll have a ripple effect. So even when the COVID-19 crisis kind of starts easing up, the ripple effect, I guess, will still continue for the industry for a little while.
Absolutely. I think that the world has changed and we won't be going back to the previous normal. I think we're entering kind of a new era of deglobalization, where there's more barriers to travel. There's more barriers to working together in close proximity. City centres won't be as busy as they used to be. And there is an emphasis in this new normal of working with the best software tools you can get your hands on, because that is becoming the critical differentiator between those that adapt quickly and survive versus those that lack agility and could die.
Of course. And will it affect you guys like long term after the crisis? What do you think you have planned for the future in that sense?
Yeah, it will affect us too. You know, just before this crisis started, we were looking at new office space in Cork, and I think we're reassessing our plans completely now. I wouldn't say we have a clear plan, but I think it's whatever we come up with in the next 2 or 3 months, it will be very different to what we had anticipated just in February this year. So I think we'll be looking at a situation where much higher percentage of people work from home. That option will likely be there for everyone, so that it wouldn't feel right ever compelling people back to working in an office situation if they felt uncomfortable on health grounds reasons, you know. So that's, I think that every business is going to face that challenge now, that as people are working from home, some people prefer it, some people don't prefer it. So I think there'll be more options embedded into kind of employment and working arrangements, and employers need to become more flexible to accommodate. So yeah, there's a new normal. No one can say for sure what it'll look like, but I think this pandemic, it's not going to go away quickly. We're going to have, it's this year for at least, and how much of next year, we don't know. Just don't know.
It's just the unknown, really, isn't it? Which is scary. Well, finally, my last question to you today, Alan, would be, do you have any advice for other startups that could be, you know, in your kind of industry of the sourcing and automation area, or just in general to startup founders? Do you have any advice for anyone else out there?
Yeah, I would say, you know, set your ambitions appropriately in year one. So, you know, give yourself goals that are achievable and find a way to incrementally build from those. You know, your longer term strategy needs to be focused on a reasonable target and an objective in year one, and something you can build from, and know your target market. You know, what is the type of company you want to serve, and be willing to turn away those who don't fit the bill or aren't part of a coherent plan. That's one thing where I'm glad we did do, is actually know our customer and know who's not our customer, because sometimes you will get approaches from businesses who are asking you, who feel that small companies will bend and adapt what the product they're building to suit a company's needs. And sometimes bigger companies try and influence product roadmaps too much. So you do have to know what you're willing to bend to accommodate and what you're just not willing to accommodate because it's not part of your strategy. And that's different for every company, but that's an important thing to try and stick to.
Definitely, saying kind of like staying true to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because then it becomes somebody else's vision, right? It's if somebody is trying to persuade you that you should build this or that, and it suits their company's needs as a customer, well, how do you resell it to others? You know, is there a large enough addressable market to make that attractive for others? Don't let others drive your roadmap too much. You've got to take a view of the market itself and find what each customer, you know, what you could build for them that you could sell elsewhere, right? And that's the key. And then you've got to try and keep all your customers happy along that path as you're doing it. So if you do take on board customers that you feel their intrinsic needs are just too different from your other customers in your cohort, then you're facing big challenges then, and you're going to be the work you're doing, you're getting too stretched, and it won't work for anybody, including yourself.
I couldn't agree more. That was really insightful. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. And thank you for talking with me today. It was great to learn and expose more the other industries that are helping the COVID-19 crisis and how everyone's pulling this in together.
Yeah, there's one thing I forgot to mention, is that we're going to be hosting a contest later on this year where we're going to have a human plus machine contest where there's a bot will compete against a human expert buyer. We'll be posting something about that in the coming week or so, and we'll be inviting people to join a live streamed contest where we'll have Gary Kasparov as a guest speaker. We would see this contest as a sequel to Kasparov versus Deep Blue in chess, but for a real industrial setting.
Oh wow, that sounds amazing. We'll make sure to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, we'll have that. I'd say a post up about that in the next week or so.
Perfect. And I will make sure that we share it for all our listeners and readers to be exposed to that as well. Well, thank you so much, Alan, for finding the time to talk with me today. It's been a really interesting conversation, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Bye for now.
Serial Entrepreneur.